Hello, Janet Gallen with Love Letters Live. Welcome. I'm going to go rather quickly to my guest this morning, Michael Vaccaro, who's an actor. And we just met 28 seconds ago, and I'm going to have as good a time as you are getting to know him. Tell us the name of your show.
My show is called Child of the 70s.
And is that something we see on the internet? Is that televised?
You can see it. Well, both, actually, now. You can see it on the interwebs. It started out on, of course, we have our own website, which is www.theofficialchildoftheseventies.com, and that's 70S. So the official Child of the 70s. You have to spell the whole thing out, the official, because I'm not the Child of the 70s. I am the official.
Okay, so you're going to tell us what that means.
But I don't think it means anything. But I think it meant Child of the 70s was taken.
Oh, okay, interesting enough.
Yes.
If people just put your name in the search box, they'll get
people,
to that
People
too.
Can Google Michael Vaccaro,
yes,
V-A-C-C-A-R-O, just like Brenda Vaccaro, for those of us older, you know, who remember Brenda Vaccaro. I've gotten that question every day of my life, pretty much. Are you related to Brenda Vaccaro?
And the answer is no?
The answer is we're not sure.
Yeah.
We've met and we've discussed it.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that her family and my family are both from a very tiny little town up in the mountains, outside of Palermo, Sicily. So there's got to be something. However, I think everybody in the town is named Vaccaro.
And it's so, located by geography.
So, you know, it's what, So, but there's something there. But
how did you start out here? I mean, what made you know that you could be an actor? Were you drawn to it when you were two?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I started out as a child actor. I was born and raised in New York City.
Oh.
And I think I got my first job when I was about 8 or 9. I think I got into SAG when I was about 8 or 9, something
doing
like
what?
That. Let's see. The first job I had was a film. There's a very little known Robert Altman film called Rich Kids, starring a lovely actress named Trini Alvarado. And we've been lifelong friends. And I believe that was my first job, and that's how I got my SAG card. Also in that film is Sarah Jessica Parker. Sarah Jessica Parker was somebody who I kind of came up with, and we
in
used to see each other.
Or neighborhood?
No. We used to see each other all the time at auditions.
Auditions. I'm always
please,
curious.
Okay.
So you were 8 years old.
Yes.
You were driving.
Well, I was in New York City, so nobody was driving.
But was this all self? Directed that you wanted to do this, and you got on the bus and went, or were your parents behind you?
Yes,
what?
My mother. I mean, nobody in my family is in show business whatsoever, so we don't know where that came from. And it's one of those things that I've always, as far back as I can remember, my earliest memories are of wanting to be a performer, musical theater specifically. That's what I came up in musical theater in New York, and so I just kind of I don't remember exactly, obviously, because it's been 900 years.
Yes.
But I think I just kind of figured out how to find auditions. Back in the day, there used to be a newspaper called Backstage, where you would get all your theater auditions in New York.
Because you do it online now.
Well, you do it online now, correct. I'm sure I met people and figured out how to get, how to find auditions, how to get an agent, how to get a manager, all of that stuff.
Good
and I kind of, yes, I definitely did it all myself. I was a fairly independent kid, and so I would just, my mother would just put me on the subway, and I lived in the Bronx, actually. And so I would just go into the city and go and do stuff. And also, my mother was tremendously supportive, but she was, she did a great thing, which now looking back on is really kind of extraordinary. She would, every Saturday of my life growing up in the 70s and 80s, my mother would get me a ticket to a matinee, a Broadway matinee. So I got to see everything. So I just, I soaked it all in. And that for me is sort of like the golden age of Broadway theater, the 70s, with Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon and Cheetah Rivera and all of those people, and seeing these amazing shows. So, yeah. So it just kind of happened. I don't know how it happened. It was just sort
of
in there from the very beginning.
Then march on in your story.
So. Well, then I worked as an actor my entire life in New York City. I did mostly musical theater. Well into my 20s, I did a lot of for years. I worked. I made a living doing productions of West Side Story all over the country. Always the same character, Baby John.
So you're really good at you're a good dancer.
Not anymore.
But you
this
were,
was, again,
yes,
900
yes.
years ago.
Okay.
This was in the Dark Ages, before the interwebs.
Now,
but yes,
you,
at the time,
take,
I was a good dancer.
Did you take
yes.
dance lessons?
I did.
Of course.
No, I studied dance. I studied ballet and
okay,
jazz and modern
yeah.
and tap. And, again, got to study with some amazing people. There was this amazing teacher back in the day called Phil Black. And people my age from New York City will, of course, remember Phil Black. He was one of those guys who was amazing, but he was also he was one of those dance teachers who screamed a lot.
Uh-huh.
Just screamed.
And you knew it was for your sake that he wanted good, or was it terrifying?
Well, yeah, no, it was both of those things. I knew that he was doing that so that you would get better, and it was terrifying,
uh-huh.
yes. And you would leave a class and you would go throw up. Absolutely.
Oh,
there's
my
no
goodness.
Question about
uh-huh,
it.
So.
But then I took a class with Anne Reinking and people like that. I mean, so that was, it was really sort of, again, a golden age.
Yeah.
So yeah, I took dance classes forever. I studied voice. So I was a singer, of course. I took acting classes when I went to high school. I ended up going to, I was a music major in high school. I went to the Fame School of Performing Arts, which is now, I mean, there was music and art, there were two schools back then. There was music and art and there was performing arts. Music and art was for singing
uh-huh.
and for instrumentalists
yeah.
and for artists, like painters and stuff like that.
So you were
and then performing
you were
the arts
road
was
all
along. Totally.
Yes. Oh, that's
absolutely.
Interesting
yeah, from
to
the
know.
Very beginning.
Because sometimes people fall into things by happenstance, but you're just pro from
no,
the
no,
start.
No. I don't know where it came from,
yeah.
but again, the earliest memory I have okay. was of wanting to be a performer. I think, you know, there was, this is dreadful news, but the Ziegfeld Movie Theater in New York City,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever been, anybody out there, the Ziegfeld Theater was the most beautiful, most grand
oh.
movie theater in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And it just closed. They just closed it, which just broke my heart. But I have a vague memory. I don't remember what year it was, but there's a movie called That's Entertainment.
Yes.
It's a documentary.
Sure.
Right? Liza Minnelli, blah, 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 all those
right.
people, all about the MGM movie musicals. I'm pretty sure I saw that and I thought, oh my, okay, that's it. That's
oh, okay.
that's for sure what I want to
okay.
do.
So,
yeah, so that's
what was
how
the move to Los Angeles then?
Oh my God! Well, that didn't happen until many years later.
Okay, go ahead.
But because I did a soap opera, I was on a soap opera for a while in New York City
what
back in the
that?
Day when soaps were, you know, when there were a lot of soaps on television. It was called Another World.
Oh sure, I remember
you
that.
Do. You remember
I
that?
Remember
okay,
that, of course.
All right. Well, good for you.
It was
you.
The only one I ever watched because
yes.
I had a friend in it.
Oh,
but
who was your friend?
Do you know Martin West?
I don't know.
Oh,
do
he
I know
was
Martin
Dr.
West?
Phil Brewer on General Hospital.
Oh, okay.
He was the first, yes.
Gotcha.
So I would watch that when I was home, just, you know, out of...
Gotcha. Well, here's the problem with Another World. I think
that's
it was
very old. That was
it was
gone on
at
for
the time, I believe it was the oldest soap
uh-huh.
on television.
Yes.
Because it had been on radio as well. But if I remember this correctly, again, it was, you know, my memory's gone. But it was on opposite General Hospital.
Uh-huh.
And this was, and I was on it around the time of Luke and Laura. Luke and Laura on General Hospital were the hottest thing. You don't remember Luke and Laura?
No.
Luke and Laura were the hottest thing on television. And you, oh my God.
I remember Erica Kane.
She was on All My Children.
Oh, that's right.
She's
on
All My
Children.
Children.
That's right. I know why I saw that, because I was home, pregnant,
yeah.
and they were just starting. And I was curious how a soap opera starts. It starts right in the middle.
Well, yeah.
I didn't, yes, that's right.
And you go back 3 years later,
sorry,
they're still in the
Ms.
same
Kane.
Place. No.
Season
so,
Kane.
No, Luke and Laura were the hottest thing on television. What were their names? Anthony Geary and Jeannie Francis. I cannot believe I just pulled those names right out of my head. Okay. So, and Another World, I believe, was on opposite General Hospital. General Hospital was on ABC. Another World was on NBC. And... So, and again, people on this show had been on it since the 50s. I mean, so everybody was ancient,
yes.
right?
Uh-huh.
And so they brought on all of these kids.
Oh.
I was a teenager at the time. I think I was 19 when I got this job.
Up, so
right.
Yeah.
To get some new blood, right?
Yeah.
But the problem was they didn't change any of the writers. So they still had all these old writers who had no idea how to write for these kids. So I was on the show for a year and essentially did nothing. Like, essentially, they never really developed any of the characters. Anne Heche was on it.
Oh, I like
at the time.
Her.
That's
yeah.
where she came out of that show. I think a lot of people came out of that show, actually. Julianne Moore,
really?
I think, came
oh,
out of Another
okay.
World. I think. I
I'm going to go
not
YouTube
lying
myself.
About, okay, yeah, yeah.
Find out
I hope I'm not lying about that. But anyway, so after a year was up, and they had never really, you know, developed any of the characters. You have a one-year contract, which then they can renew for 2 years or not. And so a whole bunch of us did not get renewed. And so there was a diner, Maisie's Diner, I think it was called, where all these kids sort of hung out, and they just set it on fire, and that was it. So one Friday, they set it on fire, and then the next Monday, I was out of a job. But the great thing about television is that it pays.
Yes.
They pay you money, American dollars. So that's when I first moved out to Los Angeles to look for more television work. So that's how I got out here.
So, and how did that go?
Well,
I can see how your voice kind of trailed off, but maybe there was a story here.
Yes. Well, no, you know, I think I was a little bit ahead of my time in that, let me think, this would have been, I was 24 or 25, so this would have been 1985,
okay.
Something like that, 1989 maybe, I don't know, 88, I don't remember. But I came out to Los Angeles and I was pretty openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, at the time it was not as chic as it is today.
Uh-huh.
So I had difficulty getting work for sure, there's no question about it.
But how do people know that? They don't ask you. Oh, openly, I see.
Okay. It was pretty clear. I mean, I don't, you know, I just was not hiding it at all.
Yes, okay.
And please do.
I'm so
of course, you, yeah,
what
this
is,
whole thing is about you asking me questions. Ask
not,
any question
what
you
does
want.
Not hiding it mean? I mean, you get up,
well,
you get dressed in the morning,
right.
You comb your hair, and you go to an audition. So
correct.
You're just a guy at an audition.
Yeah, but I think, like, I was... that's an interesting question because I don't think of myself as necessarily effeminate, but I had a boyfriend and we went everywhere together and like I wouldn't talk about dating girls. I mean, like, you know, if people asked me questions,
I wouldn't know that you were gay unless you told me.
Yeah, I guess. Right.
Okay.
You know, people would ask things about your life and I would just say, oh, me and my boyfriend did this and blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
blah, blah.
I see. Okay.
And I think at the time, you know, I mean, even still,
well, that's the answer.
Yeah.
Sure.
Even still, it's, I think it's scary for the industry, but back then it was like, you know, you didn't want to touch that stuff, even if somebody was playing a gay character.
Sure.
And if you were playing a gay character, it was, you know, it was one of those characters that was offensive, offensively gay. And I always had a problem with that.
Sure.
You know, so when I was confronted with things like that, I would, you know, either say something about it or just not do it. So there's no question about it. I definitely had a hard time out here.
Is that what prompted you to start? Well, no, because your show now is, you said, about 5 years
this
old.
This is many years later,
okay.
Right. But then I ended up going back to New York because even though I was here in L.A., I still continued to get work back in New York. So I would go back and for a while and work, and then I would come back to L.A. And then finally, I was getting so much work in New York that I just finally went back for a while. And then I came, I ended up back in L.A. in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been here ever since, mostly because I can't stand winter. I can't handle it.
Yeah.
It's too much. I'm too old.
I was waiting if you were going to say that.
Okay. Yes.
And then, please. So where did you slide into what you're doing now? How did that arise?
Well, again, I just had an idea.
And you got so much experience behind you.
Well, the thing is, I've been an actor forever,
yes.
But I have never been a writer. I never wrote anything before. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about directing, certainly film. I know nothing about producing,
uh-huh.
But I did have an idea.
What was your idea?
Well, I had this idea. I was going to pitch it as a sitcom. And it had been in my mind for years and years. But the great thing here, talking about the web.
Yes.
There it is, the web. I mean, it sort of changed everything, and I saw that people were doing their own projects on the web, and I thought, oh, you know what? I don't have to keep banging my head against the wall trying to get a meeting with some network executive to pitch my idea.
Yes, isn't that
I could
wonderful?
Do this myself.
Yes.
And once I sort of realized that, I kind of sat down, and I thought, okay, I have this idea, so I'm going to write it. And again, not having written anything before, didn't know what that experience was going to be like. But I think it had been sort of, you know, brewing in my head for so long that once
can you tell us the theme?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like my favorite television series growing up was Rhoda.
Oh, yes.
Right? And so, I love her journey. Rhoda took this journey. She started off with Mary Tyler Moore in Minneapolis as, you know, sort of the fat, ugly duckling.
Gorgeous, she is.
Gorgeous, right? Gorgeous. But of course, you know, gorgeous people oftentimes don't know that they're gorgeous.
Oh, I understand. That's true.
Right.
Yeah, you see that.
And so, and she certainly didn't. And she had to go sort of through this whole journey of, you know, to realize that she, in fact, was beautiful. And
I remember the episode, by the way, where she lost all that weight and she was
and
so
she wanted beauty contest.
That's right. And she was so self-conscious that
Correct.
She couldn't bring herself to own that.
I'm so glad that you were bringing that up and that you remember that, because I sort of stole that idea.
I could lip sync that entire series.
That's wonderful. The hemp
starting with Mary Tyler Moore.
Right.
Excuse me. And the 5 weeks yes. of Phyllis, poor thing.
Phyllis. Well, we can talk about Phyllis,
okay.
too. Let's talk about
Phyllis.
Then of course she gets her own show,
right.
and she meets this gorgeous
Joe.
You know, she's gorgeous, and she meets this gorgeous guy, and then they're gorgeous together and blah blah blah. But then they get divorced,
right.
and Rhoda's journey, as far as we know, like ended with her being single again,
right.
but being completely happy being single and being independent, an independent woman in New York City. Now at the time I was a kid, that really struck me. I'm not a woman, but it really, that whole journey, you know, I really understood it. I think maybe growing up gay is a...
And growing up with bus fare into the city from the Bronx from the time you were a little kid.
I get you, right, right. And
you could trust yourself
and
to get
yeah,
on.
But growing up gay maybe, I think, helped me to understand that feeling of being not worthy or you know, not being accepted, all that stuff. And so I really identified with her. So I loved that story, and I kind of wanted to tell that story through maybe, you know, a gay point of view, a gay man sort of experiencing that whole thing. So I wrote this story about this. Essentially, it's my life. This gay actor growing up in the Bronx... you know, working desperately to try to get, you know, try
and
to get some kind
Charlie
of success.
You're calling it Charlie in the 70s because that was such a formative time for you.
Yeah, and the show was shot in it's sort of an homage to 70s sitcoms, so it has that sort of feel to it, and it's sort of shot that, like all those great shows, like Mary Tyler Moore, like Rhoda, Bob Newhart, all those great shows. Those are the things I grew up with. And so we sort of, and I steal a lot from all of them. I stole essentially the whole Rhoda, of course, storyline, and I steal moments from Mary Tyler Moore, and I steal moments from Bob Newhart and all that stuff. So I had this idea, so I wrote it, it kind of wrote itself. I just sat down one day and, blah, you know, it all just sort of came out. And then I had the script, and once I had the script, I thought, well, I have to do something with this. I can't just sort of let it sit here. And so, again, not knowing anything about producing, but I figured out how to raise money, and I figured out how to find a cast of actors, and I figured out how to get a crew, and we shot the first season. We had some amazing people in the first season. Donna Pescal was in our first season. If you remember Angie, do you remember Angie? The television series Angie. She starred, that was her television series in the 70s, and she was also in Saturday Night Fever.
Yes,
that you remember. And Carolita White, who played Big Rosie Greenbaum on Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, I love Laverne and Shirley.
Right. She was in our show on the first season, and you said you spoke to Stephen Wishnoff yesterday. He's in our first season. So I got all these great people, and we did a season. And all of a sudden, we had a season. And then I put it on the web.
I have a question about
that.
Please.
Yes.
The technical stuff always makes it. How do you know what to do to put it on the web? You Google how to put it on the web?
Well, yeah. I just, you know, I got a YouTube channel. And
that's just a process that anyone can follow.
Correct. Anybody can get a YouTube channel. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. It's nice for people out there to know.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. It's not terribly difficult. And, you know, and I just uploaded it onto YouTube, and there it was. And all of a sudden, it was a thing. And then people started watching it. And then I thought, well... I have to do a season two, I guess. And so the same thing happened. I got a season two, and I got a bigger crew, and I got more actors. Season two, we ended up, it got very ambitious very quick. I follow the Rhoda storyline. So I got a husband named Joe, and there was a gigantic wedding scene. And there's a Phyllis character who's played by this this amazing actor named Terry Ray, who has his own series online, which is called From Here On Out. He also has another.
Oh, what a nice title!
Yeah, he's got two series online actually. Look it up, people, if you want to see two great series. One is called From Here On Out, and the other one is called My Sister Is So Gay, which Lonnie Anderson is in with him. Terry Ray is his name. So he's sort of my Phyllis character. He's the real bitch. Like, he's the bitch that everybody loves to hate on my show. And then we did a season three. And now, next Monday, February 29th, we're premiering season 4.
And how along do you find that? Because I'm going to go and spend a couple of days just looking at your past episodes.
Okay, yeah, please do. Catch yourself up. Yes,
good.
Yes. And they're easily digestible. I mean, it's a web series, so the episodes have definitely gotten bigger and longer.
That's another advantage. Yeah. Then you're not tied to a half an hour.
No, I can do whatever I want.
Something to say.
The first season, for instance, we had 5 minute episodes, we had 8 minute episodes, we had 12 minute episodes.
I'm so old that this doesn't occur to me. I think in terms of
half hour, right? Yeah. But yeah, no, you're on the web. You can do whatever you want.
Of course you can.
And so as we've gotten bigger, and as we've gotten more ambitious, and as we've gotten more money, we got sponsors now. You know, it's a whole big thing. I have I think 40 some odd actors in the show. There are a lot of people. Jerry Jewell from The Facts of Life is in it. Ted Lange from The Love Boat, who played Isaac the bartender, he's in it. Judy Tenuta, amazing comedian, you know, she's in it. Bruce Valanche is in it. I'm sure I'm missing tons of people.
Well, I have a question.
Yes, please.
That is burning in my head.
Okay.
You decided to do this and not, you realized you didn't have to go the traditional route of finding producers and you didn't have to pitch it to a TV station.
Right.
Are they kicking themselves in the head at things like this happening where they're losing out on something fabulous?
Well, this is where they're getting a lot of content from. I mean, now you have 9 million different networks, you know, and they're all on the web. Amazon, Netflix are the two biggest ones, of course. But everybody's looking for content. And so that's what happened to us. After our third season, we actually sold the show to a network. So now you can see us on television as well.
Okay, that's interesting.
Right. So we're on
they don't have to kick themselves. They can just watch you develop and see how it goes and then say,
and then buy it.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. That's correct. And it's, you know, the truth is, this has been like a calling card. This is a business card. You know, here, look at my stuff. This is what I do. And they do. And it's easy for them to look at it. They just click a button on their computer.
I mean, the world is so different now. My daughters.
Yeah.
They got rid of their television set. They don't have television sets. They live their whole entertainment life on the internet.
Sure. I watch most of the stuff on my computer now as well. Netflix. Everything's on Netflix. And Hulu. Everything's on Hulu.
But also, some of the very creative stuff that doesn't get on NBC.
Absolutely.
Because people like you have decided, I'm going to do it myself. I don't need them.
You could get sucked into a YouTube void and just watch, you know, all content. You know.
I've done that.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, there's that sidebar down the right where more of the YouTube. So you can
You can suggest things for you. There's no question about it. So now we're on Out TV, OUT, Out TV, gay television network, and we are on, you can find us on television, I think in like 8 different countries now. The Baltic States, the Netherlands, Poland, Sweden, Canada.
I love the look at you. See, I need a TV moment for this, because you look amazed as you're saying it.
Yeah, well, it is pretty crazy, because now, again, we have sponsors, and now we have commercials, so it's like a real show now, and people come to me the last couple of years and say, hey, I want to be on your show. And, you know, and again, we get amazing people. We have Gina Hecht. Gina Hecht used to be on Mork and Mindy, for God's sake. you know, so we have the tremendous actress named Lynn Marie Stewart, who played Miss Yvonne on Pee-wee's Playhouse. you know, I mean, it's just, we just got insanely lucky. Amy Linker. Amy Linker, because all roads lead to Sarah Jessica Parker. Amy Linker was the co-star of a television series in the 80s called Square Peg. Alongside Sarah Jessica Parker. And she's in our series now. I mean, so Susan Olsen from the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
We have Cindy Brady. Cindy Brady is on my television series. Sheena Metal, who's an LA talk radio personality icon.
Yes, she's in the show. One with me, actually.
Great. That's terrific. Yeah. David Zimmerman. Mutual friend, has been in it for 3 seasons now.
Wow. This is wonderful. I'm so glad to know about all this.
Yeah, it's really. And
this is all news to me.
I had a moment, I remember, this was interesting, at least for me, maybe not for your audience, but it was at the end of season 2. We were shooting a big wedding, the big wedding scene, and literally we had 40 people in the room, you know, with actors and crew, and it was catered, and it was a whole big thing. And all of a sudden, I burst out crying. I was standing in the corner of a room and watching all this, and I burst out crying because I realized this idea, this little tiny idea that I had had in my head, like, you know, 2 years earlier or 3 years earlier, whatever it was, had become this thing that was really no longer mine.
Uh-huh.
you know, it was like having a baby and letting the baby out into the world.
Yes.
And it's such an amazing thing to know that there were other people involved, and other people had a stake in this, and other people had an investment in how good it was.
It's a responsibility for you.
Yeah, and people enjoyed it, and people wanted to be a part of it, and people wanted to watch it. So that was that. I mean, I couldn't ask for. Couldn't ask for anything more than that.
Well, let me segue.
Yeah, okay.
I am ultimately about love letters because, you know, gratitude taken to the grave serves no one, I think. And, you know, most love letters are about gratitude. And every life I have come to see, I've always known this, every life, every day has something that has the seeds of a love letter to someone. And if you were to write one right now, who would it be to? Because I can see four people in your life that I'd like to write to and say thank you.
Yeah, I mean, this is I'm going to start to cry.
Good.
My mother, for sure.
I was going to say that, yes, for what she did specifically. And she's still with us. She still lives in New York?
She is not.
Oh.
With us. I'm going to start to cry because she literally just passed away about a month ago.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry to hear that.
But I mean, she gave me everything. She was a single mother when it was not hip and cool to be a single mother. I was born in 1964,
uh-huh.
And you know, there were not single mothers. But I mean, I'm sure there were, but
wasn't easy.
It was not easy for her in 1964 to be a single mother, and she really, really struggled. But she somehow was able to do all this stuff. I mean, she was a single woman, sort of scraping by, and she got me singing lessons, and she got me dancing lessons, and she got me acting lessons, and she bought a piano so that I could learn how to play the piano and a guitar.
So there's your love letter.
Yeah,
everything you're saying, because it's filled with specifics. You know, you're so special, doesn't mean squat. and you have siblings.
I don't.
Oh, it's just you. So
just me.
Who do you have else in here? Do you have other relatives?
I had a very small family, which was interesting for Italians, you know, because Italians procreate and have 9 million kids. But my mother did not do that. So
that was good that she did not do that, given that she was the sole one.
Right. You know, so it was really just me and her when I was growing up.
So you could write it to her.
Yeah.
Which I know you're going to do.
Okay.
Who are you going to mail it to? Those love letters have to be mailed, you know.
Well, I mean, she's gone, so I think I would probably mail it to myself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good for you. Okay. And you keep it and put it in some treasure box, but two things.
Yeah, okay.
And really, dear mom,
right.
Writing this to you.
Yep.
And all the specifics, everything you just said,
mm-hmm.
The specific things she did for you and made you realize how great you are. And then you put it in some treasure box, but you'll see that the you who wrote it and the you who read it are two different people.
Absolutely. I get that.
Entirely. And you just put it in some treasure box. And, you know, I have become very big on looking down the line because I know what it's like, and everybody does because you see it always makes headlines, when somebody's letters are found.
Right.
Letters to Jackie Robinson. Donna Reed wrote letters to the serviceman, and they're all, I mean, they were found. They're a reliable, important piece
mm-hmm.
of history.
Right.
That you'll be leaving a little trail of in your own handwriting so that whoever finds it, and it'll go into some film industry archives.
Right.
It'll be holding something that's felt the touch of your actual hand.
Right.
You lift that envelope closed, they could get your DNA and do
Correct.
Wonders.
Right.
Okay, so you do that?
I would love to do that. Yeah, yeah. I'm big on writing letters. I'm old, so I don't like emails. I still miss writing letters to people. I miss sending notes.
No need
to
miss it.
Yeah, yeah. You can still do it.
Yes.
Right. Absolutely.
And sometimes, by the way, it's quicker than a phone call.
Right.
You know, you want to say something. I'm just thinking about you. How did your audition go last week?
Yeah, yeah.
Because try to call somebody. Voicemail, call
sure.
you back, voicemail.
Right.
Nobody's anywhere anymore.
Nobody's anywhere. That's right.
But
nobody's reachable.
Mail.
Yeah.
So after three phone calls, I don't waste any more time with it. I get it, a piece of paper and a pen.
There you go.
And I drop
funny.
It in the mail. Yeah. It's quicker.
That's great.
And
it's
also
I can absolutely,
store.
I can,
okay.
I can absolutely do that for sure.
Perfect. I'm so glad. Thank
yeah.
you.
Of course.
Thank you for doing this, man. I'm so happy to meet you and know what you're doing.
This was a pleasure.
Learning about possibilities.
Yeah, and that's the great thing too. Is that you know, anybody can do anything they want. That's what I realized. Because once I did this, then all of a sudden I started getting these other ideas. Oh, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do this. I've accomplished this. Wait a minute. So what else should I do? And it just sort of, you know, it helped me. It was a huge breakthrough for me mentally, for sure.
By the way, you have another thing that I don't know if you agree with it or not, but genetic good luck.
Oh, I
in a whole bunch of ways. I mean, the fact that you're good looking, I'm not even counting.
Thank you.
But that you have all this independent creativity and strength is, yes, credit to your mother, how she raised you.
Yes.
But there's a genetic component to this.
There's no question about it. And it's so funny that you bring that up because I there's an episode about this in season four of my show where I have a scene with this woman, Gina Hecht, who plays my mother. And, where I talk about that, where I talk about how, because I know that I got my strength from my mother, and it's not just because of how she raised me, but like it was given to me at birth. She gave me a gift.
Yes.
Right.
Straight through the placenta.
Absolutely. There's no question.
Oh, and thank you so much for doing this with me. Will you come back and do something else when you have something else to say?
Well, I always got stuff to say. That's right. I can never shut up. Okay. But yeah, of course I will.
I want you to shut up. Okay. Well, thank you so much, dear. And I just want to remind you all that I do all the time, that if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. It is your own history in your own handwriting, and your story is as worth telling as Romeo's and Juliet's. So you might as well do it yourself.
And hopefully not as tragic.
Well, hopefully not as tragic. Thank you, honey. I'm going to say goodbye for now. Janet Gallen saying goodbye. Goodbye, Michael Vaccaro.
No, it was wonderful. Thank you.
Until next time. Bye-bye.